Hello and hi, welcome to another Slice of Sci-Fi. I'm Summer Brooks, and my good friend Kevin Batchelder is once again on the mic.
Hello, gang.
And that can only mean one thing. We are going to uber geek out over TV shows coming up for you this spring and summer season.
Well, we're going to limit it to early summer, otherwise we'd be here for 2 hours.
We can plan for that for the fall. How about that? I have no objection to super long shows, as long as they are entertaining and not boring.
And for those of us who are, like myself, certainly on the older side, isn't it nice that we now get new shows year-round?
Seriously, you don't have to wait through 20 or 22 or 24 episodes where some storylines might be dragged out or some episodes might not quite be as awesome as others. And then you wait 4 months, 5 months, mm-hmm. and then start all over again. Now we get new shows all year round, and I like it.
Yes, it is. It is very cool to be having stuff starting up literally almost every month. So I think it's pretty cool.
Yes, I will admit right now that I fell behind in my 12 Monkeys watching.
It is so good.
I know. I've heard. Oh. I was planning to. You probably heard in the interview I did with Travis. I was planning to do a 5 episodes in, but I was a couple episodes behind when I talked to him. I kept watching, and I'm like, oh man, it's getting too late to be 5 episodes in.
Yeah.
And now that we've had all 13 episodes, I'm just going to end up doing a review of season 1, but I haven't had time to watch those last 3 episodes yet. Yeah. So don't spoil anything.
No, we won't. This is the type of show I think you're going to find a lot of folks come this summer because of conversations like we're having are going to go, I didn't watch that. I'm going to have to go watch it. I think you're going to see a big set of folks going back to watch for the first time, and a lot of folks like myself who will even be doing a rewatch because, man, there was so much stuff that happened. I need to digest it again to be sure I follow it all.
Yeah, thumbs up on a rewatch. And I would actually love to find out where people can go binge watch 12 Monkeys, because right now, unless you DVR'd it, you're not going to see it unless Sci-Fi Channel does another marathon of it, because the episodes are not staying on Hulu and you have to connect to a provider in order to see it. I'm like, you are owned by NBC Universal, who owns part of Hulu. How can you possibly have 50 episodes of an NBC series and have 1 episode of a Sci-Fi Channel series? This doesn't make any sense.
No, I know. It's kind of been the pattern, unfortunately, for sci-fi shows. If we want to get other access to them, unless it's several months later, we are forking over the money on iTunes or Amazon or Vudu or one of those services, unfortunately. Well, I'm hoping they're going to be doing a marathon or two maybe mm-hmm. soon or something. I mean, I know they did one leading up to the finale, but I'll have to wait to see.
And here's for 12 Monkeys. I would have bought the series on iTunes, but I'm greedy. And I'm holding out hope that any DVD or Blu-ray set they come out with has tons of commentary.
Oh yeah, this begs for commentaries. Oh my, absolutely.
Goodness, if they put out a set and each episode doesn't have its own separate commentary track, I'm going to call up Travis and go, dude, really?
You got to make one for us. We're doing a fans one right now.
Oh my goodness. So yeah, that's the only reason I didn't just go ahead and buy the series on iTunes. It's also why I didn't buy Constantine on iTunes, because I'm holding out hope that A, we get a second season, and B, commentary.
Yeah, I haven't heard any early news. TV shows on DVD.com is a great site, and they haven't had any early news yet on that, but I'm certainly keeping an eye on it because I know there's a lot of folks like you and other folks who, like our podcast listeners, who are like, oh, I didn't jump in. I'm like, I haven't heard anything yet, folks, so you're going to have to Stay the course till we get some more info.
Yeah, TV shows on DVD has been a favorite website of mine for at least 12 years.
Yeah, at those least. Guys are great.
They are on top of it, especially with old releases, new releases. I mean, they get info on Warner Archive releases before I do. I'm like, dude, I'm on the same PR mailing list you are. How did you find this out a day before I did?
Well, speaking of finding TV shows, a little bit of a tangent here, but I think a lot of folks might be interested. There's a great new app now out on the iOS side, you know, iPhone and iPad, called Fan TV. And it, you know, over the last couple of years, certainly with the explosion of streaming and such, there have been a lot of websites or apps, like if you want to find out where you can watch a certain show or movie, that right. have been okay. But this new one that just came out a couple of weeks ago is by far the best that I've found. It's free. So if you're on an iOS device, I know they're working on a web-based version for anyone on any mobile phone, but do a search in the Apple iTunes store there for Fan TV, and I just brought up 12 Monkeys, and as we already knew, it just confirmed that those are the only options. But it's been great for finding other shows. I've wanted to find back episodes. You know, you can put in your cable provider, and along with finding out things like Hulu and other places, it'll let you know the websites or the the originals, the abcs.com or what have you. So it's a good way to be able to cobble up and find something you're looking for.
Sounds like something to keep an eye on, especially since now that Game of Thrones has started, I'm seriously wondering, like, should I get HBO now? Do I just keep waiting in my holding pattern? I don't know.
Well, so. I think they're doing a first month free on it, too, so you can at least... You know, in the case of Game of Thrones, come close to getting all the eps, you know, for a one payment situation.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, let's go down what we have currently. I think the first or the earliest of the new series that came out this spring where it was iZombie.
Yeah, a couple episodes in at this point. This is the one with Rob Thomas, the creator behind, the guy who did Veronica Mars.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, this was a show I kind of, myself, you know, wasn't all that interested based on the premise, you know, a zombie, another zombie show, blah, blah, blah. But, and I'm not someone who watched Veronica Mars, but I got to tell you, this thing is a neat little hit. It's really a lot of fun.
Yeah, I caught the trailer on Hulu, and I'm like, okay, I'll have to add this to my list. And it's on my list to go back and watch.
Yeah, it's not serious. This is not The Walking Dead or even The Walking Dead Light. This is very much, I wouldn't call it comedy. It might be close to dramedy, but it's sharp. Dialogue is very sharp. The stories have been kind of interesting. You know, it's a little bit of a procedural aspect, but really, it's, when folks ask me, it's not really like the case of the week. I call it the caper of the week. Because it's not serious investigation, but it's it's an interesting set of characters. So I've been very pleasantly surprised so far.
Cool. Is it in terms of comedy? Is it more along the lines of Black Sheep or Fido?
The interesting thing, believe it or not, even though it's iZombie, the zombie part of the show is pretty minimal. So I don't compare them too much to some of those because I'm hedging because I don't want to give away too much other than to say there, it's not like you've got hordes of zombies or that the general public is even aware there are zombies in the show. So it's a different take entirely on that case. That's why I think it's fresh and worth a look. Take a look at the first ep.
I will have
to. The other eps have been very similar, so you'll know whether or not it's for you probably by that first episode.
Okay, I will have to check out the first episode because that's not the impression I got from the one trailer I saw. So I will...
Yeah, and that's why I say this was one when some of the early trailers I saw, I had very little interest. And I kind of said, okay, well, I'll at least check it out. And I'm like, wow, this is a pleasant surprise.
Interesting. Now, another series that deals with, I don't know, the dead, I suppose, Deadbeat. I just saw a thing that Deadbeat's coming back April 20th, I think.
It refresh me. Is this the comedy that's on Hulu?
Yeah, it's a comedy that's on Hulu. It's a Hulu original. It stars
it's the kid from
Tyler Labine. He was in Reaper. He was in Reaper, and he can see dead people.
Yeah, I checked out a couple of the first season eps, and I got to say, it didn't really catch me. So I didn't go back to it. I didn't hate it. It's just like comedy for so many people is hit or miss. Even, you know, someone loves a comedy and the next person goes, that wasn't funny. So, but for me, it didn't really hit the mark, but I can see where for some people it would.
Some of the earlier episodes, some of the comedy felt flat to me, but it's one of those things where I was going to go back and watch the rest of the season. And then I saw, I guess last week, maybe the trailer for it popped up when I was watching, what was I watching? I don't remember. I think I was watching reruns of Daily Show or something. And a trailer for it popped up. I'm like, oh, they are doing a season two. Cool. So that's out there for people who wonder what might have happened if the little kid from Sixth Sense grew up to be a stoner.
Excellent description.
Now, we have, I guess, the two most recent newbies are Olympus and Daredevil.
Yeah, and I suspect almost everybody listening to this has heard of the Daredevil series on Netflix.
should I wax poetic now or later?
You know, whatever flows. I know most of my friends appear to have already watched the entire season. I've only got a couple eps in, so I think I'm in a minority there.
The fact that you are able to stop watching speaks volumes to your ability to pace yourself.
That I have a billion other shows I watch.
Because I totally forgot that it was coming out April 10th. For some reason, I had it in my mind as April 12th. I knew it was April 10th, but for some reason, I had said, okay, Daredevil and Game of Thrones both start on the 12th. And Friday night, I flip over to Netflix, and there Daredevil is at the top of my list. And I went, well, that was today? What?
That's a pleasant surprise.
Yeah, so it was a very pleasant surprise, but it's 8 o'clock at night. So I flipped to the episode list, and I'm like, what, 16 items? What? And then I realized it was 13 episodes and 3 trailers. And then I realized, wait, I always thought this was going to be 10 episodes. They gave me 13. Holy crap, it's 8 o'clock at night. I'm not going to be able to watch all 13.
And it's 13, almost close to an hour.
Yeah,
it's not, you know, broadcast TV 42 minutes either.
Nope, they're all 53 to 56 minutes long, I believe. I think the average is 55 minutes, but still, it's a good hour. You're talking your full hour, none of this 39-minute crap.
Yep, absolutely.
And even better, because it's Netflix and not broadcast TV, they don't hold back on the violence.
Correct.
You really get the hand-to-hand brutality of some of the darker episodes that you might have read in the Daredevil comic. So I'm literally buzzing through these episodes, and it gets to the point where I can't keep my eyes open anymore. And I'm looking, I'm like, okay, it's 1:30. I got to make a decision. Because if I fall asleep watching this, I can't do it. So I watched the first 7 episodes Friday night. I got an earlier start and watched the last 6 episodes. No, it was 6 episodes, then 7 episodes. So like Saturday night, I watched the last 7 episodes. And those last 2 episodes, I was like, okay, I did not see that coming. Holy, oh my God, they went there. I did not see that coming. And that was what that was for me. And I just sat there at the end of it saying, I'm going to have to watch this again, all the way through again. Mm-hmm. And the thought of that did not upset me at all. And then Saturday was reading various tweets of people just saying, oh my God, Daredevil's awesome. I think Aaron Douglas, who played Chief Terrell in Battlestar Galactica, he tweeted one, Daredevil on Netflix. This is just great or something like that. It was just, and I'm like, dude, I know how you feel.
Yeah, so, yeah. I mean, you can tell it's Netflix too, and it's nice because those first couple of, I'm just going on those first two that I've seen, is that they're not trying to rush through like a lot of network pilots might do. I mean, you've got slow moving important story bits, so it's taking its time. It's letting it breathe. It's letting you feel you're part of the universe without having to rush to storylines.
Mm-hmm. And for people who haven't seen it yet, I will not go into spoilers. I think the only flat part of the entire storyline, I thought they spent a little bit too much time with Karen's investigation into what happened to her friend. I thought there should have been a little bit more, I guess, development on the backstory between Matt and Foggy, which I thought was great.
Mm-hmm.
If they could have shifted that a little, like maybe 10 or 15% away from Karen and added that to Matt and Foggy, this truly could have been a perfect season one. I am sad we didn't get to see as much of Claire, the nurse who fixes Matt up. But from my understanding, she was somebody, or there was a character like her in the comics that I never, that was in there after I stopped reading it. So I'm not really sure what her role later was in the comics. But for, in terms of the atmosphere of Hell's Kitchen, the attitude of the people there, the way they portrayed Wilson Fisk at the beginning, and to see him transform towards the end, I thought was a brilliant piece of writing. And it just, Vincent D'Onofrio is a gifted actor, and I think so many people overlook that. And watching his transformation from Wilson Fisk to the person we know is as Kingpin was beautifully drawn out over the entire season. And there was big payoff. There was a big payoff at the end that I enjoyed.
Well, very cool. I'm really looking forward to it. It's nice to have it. You know, in my case, I like to savor it, so.
The fact that you were able to stop after two episodes, golf clap, dude, golf clap.
Well, like I say, a lot of other shows I love to watch that I have to keep up on, so I've used that as my way to parse it out.
Now, do you follow Salem at all?
No, it's not a show I ever got into at all. Just didn't, from trailers and stuff, seem like one I was going to be all that interested in, so I never got on that bandwagon.
It's something I would have checked out, but I don't have cable, so I have no way to watch WGN. And I think season one is on Netflix now, so I was gonna check it out ahead of season two, since they sent me some trailers and stuff. They didn't send any screeners, which I was kind of disappointed by. But your TV partner in crime, Wendy, has been following the show, right?
Yes. Yep.
Okay, well, Wendy has given us a little, I guess, recap and preview, which we're going to listen to now.
So Salem is set in 17th century New England during the time of the Salem witch trials. And in this story, it asks the question, what if there actually were witches at that time? There was also a witch panic fueled by the Puritans, but in some part it was also fueled by the witches for their own purposes. And Salem has another supernatural element besides the witches, which is the powers of the Native Americans, who in this story are at war with the colonists in alliance with the French. So the Native Americans are definitely hostile. The Puritans are running the show in Salem, but they have some witches amongst them. The most notable is Mary Sibley. Mary Sibley is also the woman who loved John Alden. John Alden left to fight in the war with the French and the Indians, and he thought he was only going to be gone for a couple of months. He was gone a lot longer, and Mary married George Sibley, who was the selectman, the mayor, essentially, of Salem. So she became a very powerful woman. Now, right after John Alden left, she discovered she was pregnant, which was very bad in that time period. So she, under the tutelage of Tituba, who was a servant who influenced Mary to give up her baby to the devil. And Mary also ignited her witch skills because of the malice she felt towards the loss of her child and the loss of her love, John Alden. So in season one, the story begins with John Alden returning after 7 years to find home is a lot different. And there is the start of the witch panic. John Alden is a skeptic. He's been out and seen the world, and he doesn't believe what religion necessarily requires. He requires proof. Another character comes to Salem, Cotton Mather, one of the leading intellects of the time period, but he's also a reverend. He's also a debauched scoundrel in love with a whore. He and John Alden eventually discovered that there really are witches, and they're trying to execute what's called the Grand Rite. And that will bring forth, essentially, more evil, which will fuel their witch powers. Now, the witches' agenda is to find their own place to practice their own ways. So the hysteria of the witch trials is a good cover for the witches who are trying to cook up this grand rite. So that's pretty much what season one is about. It's also about the love story between Mary and John, which has some problems, obviously, because she's keeping a secret that she's the most powerful witch in town. But John Alden's got some secrets, too. Season two begins with the fallout of things done in season one, and I'll say no more, so you're not spoiled. It also introduces new characters and broadens out the universe of Salem to include Boston. Some strangers come to town, notably in season two, Lucy Lawless comes in as a character who is a countess and a witch from Europe, probably the most powerful witch we've seen in the show to this point. Stuart Townsend joins the show this season, playing a doctor who comes to Salem to help deal with a plague that has broken out. And he is a scientist, so he's also at odds with some of the other folks in the town. I've only seen the first episode, and so far it's off to a great start in terms of what they are expanding in the universe and where they've placed all the characters we've come to know in season one. If you like shows like True Blood, American Horror Story, Penny Dreadful, The Vampire Diaries, you would probably enjoy Salem. There's some great actors. Janet Montgomery plays Mary, Shane West plays John Alden, and Seth Gable plays Cotton Mather. They're all outstanding, and there's a great supporting cast, particularly a couple of characters who are witches in various states of skill. Salem's definitely a horror show. It has a grossness factor and a creepy factor. It also has a sexy epic love story and the occasional snark, mostly by John Alden and Cotton Mather. So there's kind of something for everyone. I hope you check it out, and I hope you enjoy it.
All right. Thank you, Wendy, for that report. I still would like a way to watch Salem, the current season, but like I said, I don't have anything that gets WGN, and I haven't gone digging for it out on the interwebs yet, so we'll see. We'll see what happens.
Yeah. Wendy now, definitely has good things to say about it on our podcast that she watches.
And I will be stuck if I actually manage to land an interview with anybody. Like, hi, I kind of enjoyed season one. I have no idea what's going on in season two. Let's talk.
We'll see if we can line up Wendy to sit in as an expert with you.
Awesome. Awesome. The other, Olympus. Olympus, speaking of recent interviews, I will have everyone know that I fought very, very hard to keep my inner geek girl in check when I was talking to Matt Frewer. Because I've been a fan of his since the Max Headroom days. Yes, I'm that old. Hush.
Yes. Some of us watched that live.
Yes, we did. If I ran down the list of shows that I watched while I was in college, people would go, really? You're that old? And I would just say, hush. Just hush.
Oh, yeah. That's your beat there. I was watching The Night Stalker in the early 70s on Friday nights. I had no life even back then.
Oh, wow.
Yes.
I remember that.
The show Chris Carter from the X-Files fame credits as being a key part of what helped him develop it.
Yeah, and he, was it Frank Spotnitz actually produced the remake?
Yeah, okay. Short-lived.
Short-lived, but I thought entertaining.
Had some potential. I mean, you know, those of us who were Carl Kolchak diehards from times past, we're going to need to be, you know, brought in. But it wasn't doing too bad, you know, content-wise. It did awful in the ratings, and therefore it was gone fast.
Yeah. They had, what, 6 episodes or something like that?
I'm not even sure if it was that many. Yeah, it was only a few.
Yeah, I think if they had gotten, like, a 13-episode run, we could have had some fun with it. But... such is life in the graveyard of dead TV shows with potential.
Mm-hmm.
We're looking at you, Fox, Firefly. But Olympus, I haven't had a chance to check out because Sci-Fi never sent me any screeners. And that it was after my first interview that I found out that it's something they another import from Canada. I was like, oh, okay, that explains why I didn't get a screener. So
I guess, yeah. I mean, I only saw a little bit of some behind-the-scenes stuff and some trailers. It just didn't really grab me. I know on our podcast over at Tuning Into Sci-Fi TV, Brent there is kind of saving up, I think, a few of the apps. He watched the first one, thought it was okay. Wasn't like, you know, run out and line up to watch anymore, but... I guess we'll have to wait and see what it develops into.
Okay. So he didn't love it, but he didn't hate it, so he's going to keep watching to see how it turns out?
Yeah, I'll kind of let him maybe queue up on the DVR for when you got a little time kind of thing, at least based on the first episode.
Okay, yeah, because the concept of having most of it be CGI, you know, green screen, was intriguing to me because it frees them up storytelling-wise. They can save money building a lot of sets, but it also ties them down a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, Sanctuary did a great job with that format a few years ago because they did a good job with some of the characters and the stories, so we know it can be done.
And I don't know if you checked out, I didn't get a chance to ask this when I was interviewing Nick Willing, but Amanda Tapping is actually behind the scenes on that.
Yeah, I mean, she's been doing a lot of great directing and other stuff too, so
you know, hopefully
she's involved. It's going to be sharp.
Yeah, hopefully her experience with Sanctuary and Stargate will help elevate that series, and we'll see some good things from it. So if anybody out there is watching Olympus, call in, let us know how you like it. That number is 602-635-6976. Or just email summer@sliceofsci-fi.com, kevin@tuningintosci-fi-tv.com.
Yeah,
we like talking TV.
Yeah, I love to hear what folks are thinking on these things.
Cool. So what's your next favorite?
Favorite? Oh,
or looking forward to?
Well, I'm certainly eager to see Orphan Black come back.
I think everybody's waiting for Orphan Black. It's hard to, you know, if you're judging by social media, I think there was a tie between Game of Thrones and Orphan Black. Game of Thrones and Orphan Black. Those are the two people were piling on. Like, after Daredevil dropped, everybody's focused on Game of Thrones, Orphan Black.
Yeah, very, very curious to see where we go with Clone Club. You know, don't want to be spoilery, but, you know, they threw quite the wrinkle at us at the end of season two, so... just some powerful performances by Tatiana Maslany and a great cast. So guest character-wise, they have Ksenia Solo from Lost Girl coming in to play a key role this season, too. So it's going to be awesome, I think. And, by the time this podcast is out, it will have started. So I'm looking forward to having my my Saturday fix.
Now, Ksenia Solo, they've already concluded Lost Girls, even though Sci-Fi Channel is just getting around to airing season 5, right?
That's correct. They finished that shoot completely. Showcase, the network that owns up in Canada, aired the first 8 already of season 5. Those are the ones starting on Sci-Fi right around now, too, on Friday the 17th. And then the back 8, it's a 16-episode final season, will air on Showcase. All they've said so far is fall, so no idea on Sci-Fi. But yeah, they've already wrapped. Everything's finished. It's in the can, so those actors are already moving other things.
Cool. So I'd be happy to see what she turns up as on Orphan Black. But yeah, it stuns me. It stuns me because I haven't seen all of season 2. But it stuns me that Tatiana Maslany has not been nominated for like 500 Emmys.
Oh, don't get me started. I mean, it's the genre thing all over again, because absolutely brilliant if you've seen enough episodes with different characters and personalities and the job she does. Yeah, I don't know how you can ignore that to not at least give it a nomination. But
and some of the clones that she's done are completely different.
It's amazing. This is one of those shows where watch the behind-the-scenes features on the DVD sets or that they put up on the BBC America website, and you just realize you even more of an appreciation for what she does and what they do from a technical level to make it so seamless. It's pretty amazing stuff. I mean, you really appreciate it. Someone, if you're a fan of TV, when you realize what goes into being able to do that, and some of these scenes that have, you know, 4 of her in them and everything she has to do to act to make that happen, and then to make a story that is just, you know, the same way, just so addicting.
Yeah, this is several levels away from your 1970s shooting the same person as Twins stuff.
It is light years, so there's some great stuff on that season 2 DVD. I won't be spoiler, but there's a scene that's a lot of fun in the finale that involves multiple clones, and they broke down the amount of work that went into doing that from every level, acting, camera work, directing, everything else, and it's one of those things that you just appreciate, you know, just some amazing skill sets to do that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because I know what goes into making a television show, and you have some characters who have like 95% screen time per episode, and it's actually intensified because she's on the screen most of the time, multiple times.
Yes.
That's a hell of a lot of work, man.
Yep. Yep, it is. So it's just something to really appreciate. And it's such an addicting show. It was great back, I think it was on... not sure it was Father's Day or something. My older daughter came over to hang out, and she's like, "Well, Dad, I'll hang out for the day. What do you want to do?" I'm like, "Have you seen Orphan Black?" By the time it was dark and she left with the season 1 and season 2 DVD sets because she was hooked.
Oh, wow.
We watched like a half a dozen episodes of season 1. So,
Has Maslany at least won any awards like in Canadian TV?
I think so, yes. Okay. I think she was recognized on the Canadian side for something not that long ago. I really don't remember the detail, but I do remember seeing a good amount of press releases and some mentions of it. So.
Okay, because there are so many people involved in the making of that show who deserve awards. I mean, this is beautiful stuff.
Sharp, yeah. Sharp as a tack storytelling. So, yeah, we like to be challenged. Most of us do, and this is definitely a show that challenges you as a viewer.
Mm-hmm. And on Friday the 17th, we have Bitten and Lost Girl debuting on Sci-Fi Channel. And we have The Messengers, which is something you just told me about. You said CW?
Yeah, this has kind of been an under-the-radar one on the CW. And this is, you know, quick couple-sentence recap on this one is that it's a story about 5 young people who actually die but then return to Earth as angels. And this whole idea that they have to defeat Satan. It's a whole end of times type story. So, you know, going to have to wait and see if this has got anything good to it. We all kind of know the CW model, young, pretty people. sometimes they put some great stories together and sometimes not so much, but we'll have to wait to see. I've seen a couple trailers and kind of been interested. So I'm looking forward to checking it out, see if anything comes of it.
Now, I'm going to have to go find some of the trailers because I didn't find any trailers for it yet.
Yeah, CW just put up not long ago a little playlist They do a pretty good job about putting out a lot of stuff on their YouTube channel. So there's some stuff there now. For a while, it was kind of hard to come by.
Okay, I will have to check that out.
And I have to get the CW props too, mentioning that, folks, in case you're kind of coming to this late. They do an excellent job about putting their episodes up for free on their website and then their smartphone apps just like the day after broadcast. So their content is usually pretty accessible.
Yeah, some of their shows do show up on Hulu right away, like the day after, some of them. I'm going to have to check out and see which ones. Because I think they were doing it with, what is it, the 100?
Yeah, they tend to put a lot of them there pretty quickly. Like I say, give them a lot of credit for not making it difficult like a lot of the other networks as far as jumping through hoops or having to have a, authentication to a cable provider or something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so we will see where the messengers go, but Bitten is another show with a strong female lead, Laura Vandervoort, yes, who recently interviewed.
Yep, she's a really cool lady. Seen her a couple times at Dragon Con. I can't say Bitten was really a show for me. I tried out first season, about half of it just didn't really do much for me. But I know a lot of folks are big followers of the books it's based on and everything else.
Yeah, the books have a huge following. The Women of the Underworld, Women of the Otherworld series by Kelly Armstrong. I had read some of the books that focused on the witches in that series, but I didn't read the werewolf ones. Mm-hmm. So I only knew of some, because the characters all appear in each other's books. So I knew of the werewolves. I just didn't read any of the werewolf books. And then last year, Sci-Fi Channel sends out this press kit that has the screener for the first two episodes on DVD, plus this series of really cool looking bookmarks, plus a reissue of the novel Bitten with the characters on the cover. And that was what surprised me. I'm like, huh, they went all out if they went for a new printing with new cover art, just, focused on the show's characters. I'm like, wow.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it's got a good following. I know some folks definitely are very interested in it. I think this is season two that's kicking in, so
mm-hmm.
I'm going to be curious to hear if folks, find it more entertaining. Because the only problem for the TV show for me for season one, very, very slow developing. Mm-hmm. So it kind of lost me a little on the...
I think that's going
to
change.
Get to the point, kind of.
I can say I think that's going to change because I watched part of the season two premiere before I did the interview with Laura. And yeah, she's angry. Someone messed up her life. I am not going to go into spoilers, but yeah, she's in a bloodthirsty kind of revenge mode.
Mm-hmm.
And the alpha male of the pack and the werewolf who she's kinda interested in, everybody's world changes because the witches show up needing their help.
Yep.
So
it's
got
some good components there.
Yeah,
it does.
So we're gonna have a whole bunch of the witches from the Otherworld series show up this whole season. And I think that might jump up the squee factor for the fans of the books.
Yeah.
And it might make some of the storytelling move faster. So who knows? You might come back to it and go, hey, okay.
Yeah. No, I think I've got my DVR set. I'm going to at least look and skim because, like I said, it had some elements of what I might like. It just didn't quite hit it. So.
Yeah. So what about season five, the last season of Lost Girl? I know you said, yeah, I couldn't help myself. I already watched the first 8 episodes.
I'm a big fan of this show. It's one of those shows that just speaks to me. I love the cast and the characters. So yes, I've caught those first 8. Again, don't want to be spoilery. So fans here in the U.S., it's going to be a fun ride. From what I'm hearing from the cast and other folks too, it's going to be something the fans will look forward to. If you have a show you love, I mean, it's 5 seasons in, you're not going to want to jump in if you haven't been watching. Certainly at this point, you'll want to go back to the beginning. But they're bringing some stuff together, and it's got some epic stuff and also some character moments that I think folks will appreciate. So it's going to be great to see it airing here in the U.S. and looking forward to those final eight.
Any character developments, plot twists that people should be aware of?
Well, again, not wanting to be spoilery, there was some epic stuff that ended at the end of season four, some real traumatic stuff, beginning of season five certainly has Bo, our lead character, dealing with that. So it's not just all, you know, humor and fun stuff. They've definitely ratcheted things up from an epic point of view in the traditional way our genre shows will, with, you know, heavy bad guy and our band of heroes trying to go up against that. So there's definitely some payoff there to it.
Okay, cool. So I think at this point I've missed so much of Lost Girl. I think I'll probably just do my bookend method and watch like the final three episodes. I've done that before. Like I'll watch like the first, you know, half of the first season and the last half of the last season and go, oh, okay, so that's what that was about.
Well, Lost Girl is one of those shows, very honestly, you don't really, or Kevin's opinion here, you don't really watch it for the storylines. It's all about the characters. It is a wonderful dynamic. The actors do a great job. They create and I'm not saying I compare it to Buffy, but it has that Buffy element of the Scooby Gang and you appreciating and enjoying the relationship of those people. So you won't be disappointed, I think, if you're watching at whatever point you jump in for getting a chance to see some characters interact. I mean, personally, Ksenia Solo playing Kenzie is probably my favorite sidekick of all time. I just think her relationship to Bo is just some pretty special stuff. You know, we have a few of those really great sidekicks in genre, and I certainly think that this is one of the ones that's up near the top of that list.
I think the Beasties would disagree with you there. I have seen Austin Basis's fans go bonkers whenever he's on screen, and he's like the world's most reliable superhero sidekick. And we'll probably talk more about Beauty and the Beast. I think it's coming back in the fall. Late summer or fall? I don't remember.
I just saw something. I don't have it at my fingertips. I think it's summertime. I could be wrong. But they did announce, CW did give a date for that not long ago.
Yeah, because I know that they had renewed it for season four while season three is still filming. So we will get season three this year. And then they've already greenlit it for season four, so everybody was happy and... But I don't know. I'm curious to see what happens in Daredevil season two because Foggy could be a sidekick now, technically. Just saying. Anyway.
Yeah. It looks like Beauty and the Beast is back on actually May 21st.
Oh, that's sooner than...
sooner than I thought. I was going to guess June or July.
Interesting. Cool.
Yeah.
Oh, so did we cover everything? Oh, Penny Dreadful.
Oh, we left. Yeah, Penny Dreadful is certainly.
Now,
that's an interesting show.
I will admit, I know nothing about this show. Absolutely nothing.
This is, well, just some of the names here. We've got Eva Green, Josh Harnett, Billy Piper, and Timothy Dalton. Makes for some powerful stuff on screen,
wow.
I got to say. And Eva Green is just freaking amazing. She plays crazy, incredibly good. I mean, this is a horror series. It's definitely going to be on the gross side now and then. It does not shy away from anything being on Showtime. Some of the storylines, some sex scenes, some other stuff. And it's got it's a horror show up and down, and it's got some pretty interesting folks. Some of the storylines move very fast. Some are much more measured. But like I say, this is one of those ones for performances. There has just been some marvelous interactions between the characters there for the first season. Season two starts on, I think, May 3rd.
Okay, so this is season two coming up for people like me who know nothing about this. Give me a capsule. What's the story about?
You're looking at some very famous characters from literature. Dracula, Frankenstein, Dorian Gray, embodied in a slight different take on them here in this series. It's set in Victorian times. So you've got that as a set piece. It's not using those folks exactly as we may know them, but with a very similar take to it. There's a Dr. Frankenstein. Timothy Dalton is kind of like the lead, has had his daughter taken by what appears to be vampires. So Josh Harnett is a hunter of creature likes, you know, hunter for hire, if you will. So it's like I say, it's got a goth feel. It's, you know, it's not your average show. And again, being Showtime, like I said, they're willing to do a lot of weird stuff with some actors who are very good. Like I say, I mean, Eva Green, she is just mesmerizing when she's on screen, because her character is very tortured and very involved in a lot of this stuff. So you get to see a lot of, you know what, hit the fan with her.
Now, the title Penny Dreadful, it is referring to the literary Penny Dreadfuls.
Yes, that concept. That's kind of the concept of what they've wrapped here.
Okay.
There's a bit of an overarching story along with them encountering some of these other characters that you'll recognize the names of.
Yeah. For you youngsters in the audience, Penny Dreadfuls, I believe, was the British equivalent of the 19th century dime store novels here in the U.S., the pulp novels that were churned out daily almost. So yeah, Penny Dreadfuls and dime store novels, early pulp. Let's just call it early pulp.
Yeah. Yeah. So yeah, it's interesting. It's, like I said, it's not light viewing, but, you know, and the season was short. I think it was only maybe 8 episodes that first season. So it's not going to take you a long time if you do want to go ahead and give it a work. But it was cable TV, so I don't think it's going to be available anywhere for free unless you've got someone with cable, Showtime, or something like that.
I will have to do a search, because I thought I saw something on Netflix for it. I could be very, very wrong, though. I could be very wrong. And it's funny that you said Showtime, because that reminded me there was an announcement a couple of weeks ago. Stars is doing an Ash versus the Evil Dead series. They've gone into production with that. Probably we'll see it either in the fall or early next year.
Yeah, but I think they're timelining fall, last I saw in one of their teaser promos.
Yep, so we have some fun stuff to talk about in the fall, talking a little bit more horror on TV.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's going to be like, I think, a 30-minute show, too. It's more on the half-hour side rather than the full hour.
Mm-hmm. Well, I guess Bruce Campbell has to pace himself. He's getting older, man. He can't wield that chainsaw like he used to, you know?
It was great to see him in The Librarians, by the way. Sidebar.
Sidebar. I'm glad that show's coming back.
Oh, hell yeah. So I think that covers most of the spring. We kind of left the one big 600-pound gorilla aside. We haven't really touched much on Game of Thrones.
Because like I said, I can't watch. I have no way to watch the current series without getting on BT Airways or anything.
Yeah.
And I'm still debating the dip into HBO Now. And for HBO Now, the big factor is the fact that I could watch Game of Thrones as it's current and go back and watch The Wire, because I missed everything after the first half of the first season for that show. And everybody keeps telling me, oh, you got to go back and watch it. You got to go back and watch it. I'm like, there's this thing called time. And there's this thing that HBO never puts their shows out on streaming. Or, I mean, literally, I could get them if I got the DVDs from Netflix. But that takes forever. Because you only get 2 discs at a time. And each season is like 8 discs. And you don't want to be bothered with that. You don't want to drop $40 on a DVD. You don't know if you're going to keep it or not. So, you know how that goes.
Oh, hell yeah. That's what it all comes down to, is available time.
Yep. So, yeah, HBO Now would solve quite a few problems. And if they have more of their older shows on there, that would be very cool.
Yes.
Oh, well.
Yeah. Oh, they're going to... You know, they're going to make it worth people's while. Let's face it, it's another big money stream for them. So.
It is. And the fact that they can tap into the stream of people who don't have cable, who can't afford cable, who can't afford satellite, but still want to watch HBO's programming. I think HBO is the, as you said, you know, the 800-pound gorilla in the room that just changed the game for streaming entertainment. HBO's like, huh. You want to watch our programs without actually signing up for HBO? Here you go.
Yeah.
And the fact that they include sports in that, I think they caught a lot of entertainment business types at the other networks with their pants down.
Well, I'm, you know, from just a TV fan's point of view, as you know, I'm going to be very interested to see how successful or what happens with it. Streaming service, because you've got to know everybody else is going to jump on this bandwagon. And this is the a la carte stuff many of us have been saying for years we wanted rather than cable, was just let me pay for the channels I really like. So going to be interesting to see if they make it work.
Yeah, because if this manages to break the bundling, I think you're going to see a big shift in cable programming and cable prices, because when I had DirecTV, I was paying for the next higher tier up than I really needed, only because that tier included the extra NBC Universal channels like Clue and Chiller. Because I watched the Chiller is fun because it has all these like obscure horror titles, but Clue was also fun because they ran the gamut of various police procedurals. So if you happen to have a genre show that was also involved police style investigation, oh, say like Forever Night, that would show up on Clue.
Yeah, it's nice when you got someone like that that's doing something that you feel is very much fan friendly in the way they go about it.
Yeah, so I was paying extra to get, I think there was like 4 total channels in that next package up, so there was like 40 other channels in that package that I would never watch, and it was all because of how they were bundled. And I'm like, dude, just let me pick and choose, because I probably will end up choosing 25 or 30 channels, but you're not allowed to. And the biggest complaint about cable costs, I didn't find this out till about 2 years ago, was ESPN, because ESPN insists on remaining in the lower basic cable end because they want everybody to have basic, everybody to have the ESPN. But ESPN costs more than any other channel by far, until you get to the premium channels. I'm like, really? And then I started thinking about it. Yeah, they're paying for baseball. Yeah, they're paying for football. Yeah, they need that money, don't they? Problem is, they probably don't have as many people watching. So you've got millions of people paying for ESPN who never watch it.
And again, that's why these streaming services now are going to be very interesting. You know, the Sling TVs and some of these other ones, to see if they make this business model work.
Yeah. If HBO shows how much money they're making from their current and old programming with this HBO Go and HBO Now, I'm curious to see who the next big one will be. And believe it or not, I would hope it would be Fox, because FX shows like The Shield and Justified are shows you can't really get on streaming services right now. And others, like they had, TNT had, yeah, Falling Skies. Can't see Falling Skies. Can't see Oh, what was that other show they had?
Well, the TNT stuff. They've got The Last Ship. You know, they've
That's the one. The Last Ship and the
Librarians,
Last Ship and,
obviously.
Yeah, The Last Ship. Last Ship, Falling Skies, and The Librarians. Even The Librarians movies. You know, mm-hmm. So having TNT and TBS, are those owned by Viacom these days?
Oh, I'm not sure who's up the ladder on those.
Yeah, it's so hard to remember who owns what. But having the TNT shows become available would make me very happy.
Mm-hmm.
So like I said, once HBO goes, oh, look how much money we made this quarter because we went to open streaming for, you know, per subscribers without having HBO in their homes, and someone else will see that much money and start salivating and start figuring out how they can get their old programming out there as well. And like I said, if this opens up the competitive floodgates, I'm good with that.
Here's hoping.
Cool. Well, thank you, Kevin, for your time this evening.
Always love talking TV, genre TV, so it was a
pleasure. We do love our addictions, don't we?
Yeah, no doubt.
So we are done, but let's take a quick break before wrapping this thing up.
Hi, this is Chuck from Technorama letting you know that nominations are now open for the 2015 Parsec Awards. Do you have a favorite speculative fiction podcast that you feel deserves some recognition? Then go to ParsecAwards.com and click the Nominate a Podcast option from the top menu. This is not a popularity contest, so podcasts with small audiences are just as eligible as those with a larger reach. All the rules are also available on the ParsecAwards.com website. Hurry, because nominations are only open during the month of April and May 2015. That doesn't give you much time. Winners will be announced at the Parsec Awards ceremony held at Dragon Con in Atlanta that first weekend in September. ParsecAwards.com. Show your love. Nominate someone. It takes about 60 seconds, and you can do more than one. Come on!
Yep, and that'll do it for this episode of Slices Sci-Fi. Hard to believe, Parsec Awards are 9 years old this year, and guess what? Slices Sci-Fi. 10 years, man! 10 years. 10 years of Slices Sci-Fi. Let's see. Officially, Slices Sci-Fi began in March 2005 as the podcast voice for the Save Enterprise campaign and fundraising. The show became the show that we've known and loved all these years in May of 2005, when we switched from being the voice of Save Enterprise to, hey, let's talk about all things sci-fi. I remember sitting there when Michael and Eva were recording those first Save Enterprise episodes interviewing Tim Brazil way back when. I think the first non-Trek related episode was 8 or 9. And then after that we had Bruce Campbell and G.G. Edgley and the folks from Star Trek Excalibur and some other Trek related fan projects. But yeah, the month of May will be the 10th anniversary of the official Slice of Sci-Fi that we know. Wow. 10 years later and I'm the last voice hanging on. Does that make me crazy? Or persistent? Or is it too hard to tell the difference? anyway. If you have any questions or comments on our TV Talk episode, if we missed a show that you're watching that we didn't touch on, let me know. Call in. That number is 602-635-6976. Or shoot me an email, summer@sliceofsci-fi.com. Ask on Twitter. Eventually, I do see all the direct questions, or not direct messages, but messages to @sliceofsci-fi. Go right ahead. I even see the messages sent to @sliceofsci-fi TV and @sliceofsci-fi UK. So go for it. Check us out on Facebook. Check us out on Google Plus. Yes, I've been a little bit more active on Google Plus. Still getting the Facebook thing going. Crazy Joe, if you are listening by any chance, or if anybody knows a more reliable way than email to get a hold of Crazy Joe, he is the admin of the Slice of Sci-Fi page. So I have to sort of jump up and down and wave and yell and scream and get his attention and say, hey, Joe, can you add this person as an admin, or can you remove this person and replace them with this person? So, Crazy Joe, if you're listening, read your email, dude. It's been a month. My new minion is waiting. SliceofSciFi.com is the website. Come over, check it out, leave comments. We have, for the newer reviews for books, movies, TV shows, we have star rating systems now, where you can leave your own rating for something that we've left a rating for. So some of the movie reviews that Noah and Darren have done, the reviews that I've done, the reviews that Ginny has done, if you don't like that Ginny gave Into the Woods 2 stars, you can leave your own comment with your own star rating on that. And it's kind of fun, actually, because a lot of people... The review I did for Parallels, a lot of people have given that 4 or 5 stars. So I'm glad to see Parallels is getting some love. And yes, I'm still waiting to find out whether or not we're going to actually get more of that series this year. It's comicbookday.com. Go check that out. Michael J's doing an awesome job over there with original content, commentary, and reviews. Your donations go to support that website, SliceofSciFi.com, SliceofSciFiTV, all of it. Still working on the Patreon stuff. It's on hold right now for a second because technical issues. And again, thank you all for continuing to listen. Thank you, SciFried, for the music. I know I've said it before how much I love the new theme for the show, but you guys kicked it out of the park, and I will continue to proclaim my love for your music, your talent, your enthusiasm, and who knows, one of these days I will get to Dragon Con again and give all of you guys a great big hug. So that'll do it for this episode. We'll be back with more Slice of Sci-Fi next week. Take care.